ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Leo Effect. Now, today I have a very special guest. It's kind of a short notice on my live commercial part. I do apologize for that. I meant to put that out yesterday to let you all know that I was doing this tonight. We actually will be releasing the recorded version of this in a couple of weeks. So if you're here watching right now, then you get a sneak peek at what's to come. My guest tonight is an amazing and talented person that I cannot wait to talk to. He actually plays a role, I guess is a way to put it, of a very, very special character that is near and dear to my heart. We're going to get to that in just a minute. So before I introduce him, I actually want to play one last clip for you guys. And it's kind of a highlight reel of things that he's done and accomplished. And that'll kind of be our lead in to having him on. So I'm going to play this and we will get our special guest for this evening out here.
The screen comes to life.
Of course, all that came from the technical side of the camera, being an editor and a film composer, which led to the other roles.
Doyle! Mr. Mason.
So where's Rip?
I was just coming to you. I swear I was.
Bullshit!
No.
Cease his madness! If we fight, we will all be killed!
A horror movie?
Is there another kind?
Boo Shakamon! D-I-R-G-I-N
cheerleaders in chains. Once they are bound, they will.
The limitations of what we're working with, I'm pretty satisfied.
That was a pretty good lead-in to my guest for this evening. Please allow me to bring in from backstage Mr. Mark Wilson, aka Merlin.
Greetings. Good to be on the show here. I thought I'd do a bit of the dialect as well so you could hear it, you know. In action and all.
Yeah,
I don't know if the Texans can understand me, but that's right. They can chat in or whatever if they need a clarification on what I'm saying. Or we could just drop the accent altogether.
I'm hoping they can figure it out pretty quick.
Well, I won't keep it up all night. It gets tiring to do it after a while, you know. Actually, it's tiring to listen to, I think. No, actually, I'm from Texas, y'all. Howdy, everybody. It's great to be on the show and nice to meet you. Actually, we haven't had time to talk or anything really, just sort of a quick,
yeah,
let's do it.
Yeah, we kind of back and forth on Facebook for about 5 minutes and then, hey, it's interview time. So
indeed.
Yeah. Well, you're here.
I'm here. Yes. What to talk about? Where to begin?
Oh, I have many questions about that.
I imagine you do. Yes.
Let's go all the way back to the beginning and
Stonehenge.
What made you decide to get into acting?
That's an interesting story. What happened there is basically I work in production. I mean, I always sort of dreamed of being an actor or, you know, getting involved at some level. And as a child, I got involved in magic. So music and magic were sort of my background. But I definitely watched a lot of films. I loved Hammer Films, which is an English horror company. They did, horror films, Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, Dracula. And they became famous in the 50s for redoing all the Universal monster films, starting with Curse of Frankenstein with Peter Cushing. And then Christopher Lee, who actually I'm related to, I found out many years later. Sir Christopher Lee, who played Dracula, and he was also the creature in the early Hammer films. So I love those films. I loved anything Western. I love comedies. I kind of love everything, but sci-fi and horror and you know, Westerns were kind of my the thing I really got into. I had some idols as a child, and thinking of Charlton Heston and Ron Grainer. And Ron Grainer is a composer, because at some point I realized that the thing I liked most about the movies, besides the acting, was the music, the score. And that score and that idea, and me being a musician, my mother was my grandmother was a choir teacher, and my mother was a pianist and a flautist and a vocalist. And I got into band and started to play, you know, piano and guitar. And just at some point I realized that acting and would be fun. So magic was the first thing I did. There's so many ways to talk about this subject. So it took me a minute to kind of get my bearings there. How do I want to lay this up? I got into magic by watching, you know, magicians on TV, and started doing that as a hobby. I was good with the hands and sleight of hands and all that, sleight of hand and all that. But at some point, many years later, when I tried to perform professionally, I became aware that really magic should be, you're an actor, it's theater, and you need a theater background, you need theater training, learning how to speak, how to present, all the things that are part of stagecraft. A lot of magicians are just doing, presenting their routines as puzzles, things to be figured out. And that's not the art of magic. So that was my kind of my first forays, wanting to be a magician. And then years later, and loving film, wanting to be a film composer. And then the long story short of that is that I got into production. And once I got into production, I started getting the opportunity to do things in front of the camera as well. And the more and more I work with directors and such on their projects, the more roles have been offered to me as a result of that. So that's kind of the quick version. Yeah.
And so you say you worked with your hands doing magic that way, like sleight of hand and things like that. Have you ever considered pickpocketing as a profession?
No, I have not considered. I don't want to go to jail, but it's a fun thing. I've actually, you know, oops, sorry, I'm banging the camera here. One of those things I saw as a child that was influential was a film called Harry in Your Pocket. You ever heard of that? I think it's on YouTube. I think you can search it. James Coburn, and it is a film about pickpockets. And it's Walter Pidgeon and James Coburn, by the way. It's very factual, so it's pretty accurate to the world of pickpocketing. On top of that, there's some great documentaries out there, and I've met some of the magicians who are theatrical pickpocketers. You know, there's a difference. There are people who do shows as a pickpocket for entertainment, and then there are real pickpockets. And of course, the real pickpockets don't want to be found. So this particular documentary I saw did reveal one of them. They actually, you know, sought him out, found him, and then got the information. There's also a great film called The Magicians with Alan Alda, I believe. I may be wrong. We're not the wrong actor. The other Alan. Give me a minute. I'll think of him. Anyway, but the point is, it's about a magician, or I should say a wannabe magician, who thinks he's a great showman, and he sees a pickpocket, and he realizes that pickpocket would, with his skill and his presence, we can make this great act as a duo. And hilarity ensues. And the pickpocket is just an amazing thief. He's not really a showman at all. But anyway, it's a good point you brought that up.
Yeah, that is. I honestly had no idea that would go that direction.
Yeah.
So kind of along that same vein, moving into the next topic, I've named it a real life magician. Because you do actual, you know, sleight of hand.
Yes, stuff. And I should add to my story. Another thing is a child that got me interested in magic, and magic is only one reason I got into film as an actor, or I should say acting on film. Acting on film is really probably more from a process, has come more from being in production and getting connections with people in the industry. But from a child dreaming and wanting. The Magician was a show on television with Bill Bixby. I don't know if you remember Bill Bixby from The Hulk, Courtship of Eddie Spotter. Father. Anyway, he did real magic. And there was a gentleman on the show that did the advising and all the, you know, the came up with the magical effects. And his name was Mark Wilson, the same name as mine. And he actually just passed away about 2 days ago. And so I actually met him, and I have, as a kid, I ordered his course in magic. It came in little envelopes, you know, and later those manuscripts were bound into a volume, a whole book. It's one of the definitive books on magic that you can purchase. And I have two copies signed and autographed by Mr. Wilson myself. So that was that was a cool moment to get to meet him. But yeah, that was another thing that got me excited about magic. But yes, I am a performing magician. I've done shows for schools, corporate events, walk around. And then about 2009, I think it was, there was a casting call for Sherwood Fortis Fair, which is a Renaissance festival here in the Austin, Texas area. And I auditioned for that role and got the part as Merlin the Wise. Now, understand that they have a cast and it's a Robin Hood themed fair. So, you know, we have Robin Hood and the Sheriff of Nottingham and all the standard characters you would find in the Robin Hood story. But only Merlin the Wise was listed as one of the audition roles on cast. Like, they wanted someone to be Merlin as part of their fair story, even though he doesn't fit into the Robin Hood. He just popped in, you know. And all the fairies came with him, you know, and right. I'm the only one that has my own stage show that was sort of audition, whereas everyone else runs around and does scenes together, you know, as a cast. And every once in a while, I get the privilege of joining our cast members as an actor and, doing a scene with them. Usually it's a very short bit, but it's always fun. And it's been a great learning experience too, because some of those guys and some of those ladies are quite accomplished, you know, Shakespearean actors and such. So,
yeah. Oh man, that was like everything I wanted to talk about right there. It's like you've done this before.
Oh, yes. Have you been? I just have to ask, have you been out there? Have you been to the fair or any fair? There's Texas Renaissance Festival. There's many.
No, unfortunately, I have not. But I do plan on checking that out when I get down there. If nothing else, just to come visit Merlin. So
I'm also the entertainment director of a very small fair that's been starting up called Evermore Fair. And it's out in Combsville, Texas right now, but I think we're on our third year coming up, fourth year, something like that. So that's part of my year. Basically, a section of my year, about 4 months, is spent doing Renaissance festivals. I also appear at Hawktown Medieval Fair in Gainesville, Florida. Been there for a couple of years now as Merlin and also as Odin. They have a theme situation as well. They do Robin Hood 1 year. They do a historical period another year. And the second year, I did Merlin the first year. The second year, they said, well, our historical period is Vikings. And they had called up and already contracted the whole thing. And then they called me right back and said, wait, we saw a picture. Don't you do Odin? And I said, yes. And they said, well, we're doing a Viking theme thing. Can you be our Odin? I was like, sure. Oh. So I was down there with the eye patch and running around as Odin, instead of Merlin. So we made a whole new costume for him. So. Yeah.
That's cool. Merlin is my favorite wizard and Odin's my favorite Norse god. So
pretty good. Yes. Yes. And with the likes of Anthony Hopkins portraying him in the films, you can't do too bad there. Yeah.
Right. That's cool. I'm jealous. I'm definitely going to have to come and check those out. That's for sure.
I see your Celtic backdrop there. I noticed that.
That's from a local store. I'll do a little plug for them real quick since you brought it up. It's a local store called Behind the Willows. They sell all manner of Celtic things. Those that watch my RPG shows, I also have a Yggdrasil goblet.
Nice.
And yeah, they have all kinds of cool stuff. So
here he is, by the way, in my studio here. I'm at Magic Room Studios. This is where I do a lot of production work, video production, music composing and scoring and such. This is my actual mug that Merlin wears on his belt. So this is it's the one prop I leave in the studio between fair season, sort of remind me. And it's a great thing to drink out of, you know, it's a nice big wooden, and it was a gift from our fairy who works with us in our show, a good friend.
Oh, that's cool. Well, moving right along, keeping this train rolling, because we have so much other crazy stuff to talk about. Let's talk music for a minute.
Music, yes. Now, film composing or live? What aspect do you want to talk about?
I'm kind of wondering about all of it, really. But I guess my real question to you is, are you into that heavy rock music? I mean, you've got that metal Merlin going on. So
I'm actually into everything. Everything. I mean, if I had to, you know, not, I don't want to disclude our hip hop brothers, but if I had to pick the one genre I'm probably the least adept at, it's probably hip hop, like true. But I view that as almost, it's a culture thing. You know, you have to live the culture to really be I could probably rap, but there's no way I'm going to freestyle or any of that stuff. And it's not something I probably would run out and buy a lot of records of and want to really dig into all the artists, though I do have an appreciation for it because I have worked with some hip hop artists producing some tracks. And I definitely, just that alone opened my eyes. But otherwise, every other style of music I pretty much love. I'm not very adept at, I guess, really what I'd call deep improvisation as a jazz performer, though I played trombone in like in an ensemble and big band in high school. I played in the jazz band. I've done some jazz drumming, some swinging, just basic shuffle stuff, you know, so I'm not a superstar in that area. But yeah, I'm totally, I love metal. I love rock. I love old style rock. I love country. I love folk. I love classical. I mean, I'm a film composer, so classical is where all my, you know, a lot of my background came from being in band. And my interests are all over. So as a kid, you know, I told you I like Westerns. So one of my stars that influences in a totally different area, vocally and also just from a guitar playing standpoint, was Glenn Campbell. And Glenn Campbell was in the original True Grit, right? Mm-hmm. Someday, little girl, you know, he sang the lead song for that, and he was in the film. And it's a long argument, but I think he did a wonderful job in the film. The dialogue is, if you watch the redo, the dialogue is very similar to the novel. And that's what he did in the original film. And so did Kim Darby. John Wayne is the only one who just said, nah, I'm just going to do what I do. You know, he didn't try. He just did John Wayne. And he, you know, he did well, of course. But if you watch him, you'll see that sort of stilted dialogue. I always thought that was interesting. But he was a big influence. And then I got into bands like Alan Parsons and the Electric Light Orchestra, probably one of my biggest influences. But it's mainly because of Lewis Clark Sr., who is a string arranger. And he's actually recovering right now in the in hospital, I think, as they say in England. And so hi, Lou, if you get a chance to watch this. But he was a big influence to me, his string arrangements for the Electric Light Orchestra. He did a lot of other things, Hooked on Classics and such. But I always like things like, you know, Beatles and Alan Parsons and ELO, things that are lush and orchestrated. And then at some point in the late 70s, I got introduced to Rush. And so I'm a huge Rush fan. If you caught that little clip of me doing some drumming there to Subdivisions. Yeah. So it depends on the instrument as to where my head goes. You know, if I'm singing, I might go more Glenn Campbell because I don't sing like Geddy Lee, you know. But I might, on drums, jump over and do, you know, and that's the thing that I enjoy most is trying to play that type of music, a little more prog rock, you know, Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater, you know, any kind of that kind of stuff, you know. So depends on what the project is. I have a lot of quirky stuff. You heard that Virgin Cheerleaders and Chains theme song playing in the trailer. That's me. Everything you heard is me. So that's why it's in there. You notice you didn't see me. It's because it's a film score I did for a feature film that's it's out. It's available on Amazon as well as Dark Side Releasing. So yeah, I'm doing all the singing and guitar playing, and you know, it's a bunch of synths and stuff on that one. And that's supposed to be 80s. It's supposed to be kind of an 80s pop thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Every style, you know, every film needs to have a direction, and we always, you know, we change it up from time to time.
Yeah, and going from music composition or like music scores for films, is that how you kind of worked your way into acting, or?
That's one of the ways, yeah, because I would be hired as a composer. It's not a real easy, it's not a very direct path, because the composer tends to work only in post-production, and they tend to kind of be isolated, you know, typically. So they don't really get to meet anyone. You know, it's a funny, it's a weird situation when you meet all the actors, and I've been working on this film for, you know, that particular project, I worked on it for a good 6 months. And when we had a premiere and I went to the set to meet everyone, they're my buddies. I know them. I know them intimately because I've been looking at them day in, day out. They're like, who is this guy? You know, they've never seen me, you know, they've heard of me, but and they heard the music and they go, oh, we like the music. But you know, it's kind of this weird thing where you feel like you know everyone really well. And then later you kind of get to know them because, you know, they realize you're part of the team, you know. I think more, I teach filmmaking. And so, you know, working, doing post-production and sometimes working on set, because I also do camera and lighting and all that stuff too. It's not my forte, but I've done it on some productions and directed a few things in industrial type stuff. I actually started in video games, by the way. I should add that. That's really where this journey began. That's how my journey into filmmaking began. So you kind of ask, how do I get there? So we'll back up. I will say back in the 80s or so, I got out of high school, 1980. I was playing in bands. I played country bands. So we're in Texas. So you ask again, the styles of music, you know, why country and rock. So doing country dance halls, SPJs, T halls, fireman halls in the local Texas area. Played with several bands, Lost Wolf and, you know, my own bands. But, doing George Strait and Garth Brooks and Alabama and Restless Hearts and all that stuff. And then some rock songs. And I bought keyboards, and I was into, you know, I bought a sampler to be a controller, a MIDI controller. So I learned about MIDI and how that protocol worked and how it talked to the sound modules. And, you know, then I had a computer, I had a Commodore 64, actually a Commodore 128. I traded a car for it. That's a whole nother story. It was only a $350 Oldsmobile car, but it was a car. I was actually in a different field completely at that point in my life. I worked as a dental lab technician. And so I got this Commodore computer so I could do sequencing. And then I had bought a Kai sampler, which I still own today, to play gigs, live gigs. And a friend of mine who worked at Music Makers, a music store in Austin, Texas, Peter McNutt, I don't think he's any longer with us, or if he is, I haven't heard from him in years. He said, hey, I've got this library program for the Atari ST, A-T-A-R-I, Atari. A lot of people don't realize I'm talking about the actual Atari, but a computer called the Atari ST, which did MIDI sequencing. And it was a sound filer library. You could send the samples to and from the computer and edit them, you know, visually. But you need an Atari ST and this special package. And he goes, well, find the computer and I'll sell you this. And so that was the beginning of my kind of world of sequencing and digital audio workstations. And about a year or so after that, a light bulb went on one day and I went, video games, that's just like film scores, because I couldn't figure out how to get in the industry as a film composer. So I got hired eventually to jump to the end of this, that part of the story, hired as lead composer for a company called Human Code Inc. And as soon as I got hired to be the composer, I'm like, yes, I'm a composer. This is awesome. And they're like, yeah, but we need you to like audition all these actors and cast this voiceover and record all this voiceover and edit it. Oh, and we need sound effects and we need interface sounds and we need set up these video shoots. And you need to go to these meetings with clients. Pretty soon I was doing music at 2 a.m. on my couch, you know, and sleeping on my couch in my office and spending my days in meetings and doing, you know, corporate stuff. But that opened the door to other things. It's how I learned some things about filmmaking, you know, started doing video shoots and such, getting exposure to that side of things, more acting. I was doing a lot of casting, a lot of directing of voice talent. So I have like 10 years where all I did was do music and voice production. So that's where I really got to work on my dialects and all that stuff. And so that was the beginning of that. And then at some point I started teaching at Austin Community College. I teach in the RTF department there. And previously I taught and sometimes still do for the Music Business Performance and Technology department. And I taught what I do. They said, hey, you're an industry specialist. You do MIDI sequencing. Can you come teach for us? And so I did, starting in Music Business Performance and Technology. You've got all these acronyms here. And moved over to RTF when they realized there weren't anyone in that department at the time that knew audio. You know, they needed someone that actually had a background in audio who worked in film. And that's why I made that switch. And at this point, it's pretty much where I teach. I've taught editing. I teach an introductory course, camera lighting, sound, and how to work on a team, how to do production planning, paperwork, you know, shot lists and storyboards and, you know, treatments and all that stuff, kind of basic documents that you use for filmmaking. And that all that and starting and doing my own productions with my little company here, Magic Room Studios, you know, meeting people, you just start to make connections. You make connections and then you get roles. And I'm a character actor. I have a look. I can do accents and, you know, but mainly it's the look. I have really long hair. Woohoo! You see that? It's all hidden back here. But, you know, they find quirky things and, you know, your job as an actor is just don't blow it. You know, just don't act. Show up and be you, you know. But, you with an accent or whatever.
Nice. Well, we have a comment from Chrissy Odinson, who
I know that name.
As people may know, we just did an interview with her recently. She says, "Go Merlin."
Go Merlin. Go so, Chrissy. We watched you too. It was awesome. We got Tony coming up too. So Tony is a good friend, and Chrissy both are good friends, and Tony's going to be on your show next week. It'll be last week. It's time shift.
Yeah, he was live last week, but he will his actual interview will be released this week.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, Tony and I and Chrissy have worked on. I don't know if you want to ask me that, but I was about to say we worked on multiple projects coming. So we worked on multiple projects and there's a great one. That's one of the few times, that's probably the only time I can think of where your previous answer, which I said, no, that doesn't happen, did happen, where you're absolutely right. I was approached for doing a score for a film, and someone else knew me and referred me to Tony. And so I met Tony, and it was strictly a do my score for this film. And that was it. And so I worked on the score for, 6 months or so. And then the film went through some kind of behind the scenes stuff. And at some point, basically, as my capabilities became known, and then they found out about Tony found out about Sherwood, and that was, I was out there, and I said, well, let me hook you up for a location out there. And so I was able to get permission from management to let them shoot out there. And so they came out and shot. And he was like, hey, by the way, I have a role for you. You'd be perfect as the head of the gypsy clan. So my lady that I work with here, Deanne Prince, she does a lot of costuming for us. She actually put together the outfit. And in that opening scene, opening clip, you could see me as the gypsy playing the fiddle and sitting around the campfire. And I had like one line, but I looked the part and got to play some fiddle, play some violin. And so that started, and we did that. And then there was some more behind the scenes stuff with the film. And at some point Tony became aware that I could do all the other stuff. I can edit visual effects, not effects, but more like compositing effects. Mm-hmm. And so he and I basically have been working on the finishing up that film, all the post-production together, he and I editing together, compositing, all that stuff. And then I'm still working on the score and the mix and all that. So that's an example of how, and then while we're doing that, we immediately, Tony had another thing that he's working with Chrissy called The Fox and the Bounty, which is a Western series slated to be. And we shot a sizzler trailer, and I went on set and did the sound and lighting, and had a quick shot of me as my character. And Tony has written a character for me, Jimbo Johnson, and I'm the dynamite expert. It's going to be fun. And we put that trailer out, and that's a project we're planning on doing here this year. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple other ones coming up that he talked to you about, I know, the other day. And we're hoping to get down to where he's at and do some shooting here soon. I'm going to actually play Odin, is my understanding, in The Myth Among the Legends. So
that'll be really cool.
Yeah, and then he has another project called The Sculptor that I may play Old Man Gene, working on that. But if at the very least, I'll be probably doing some music and helping with the edit and all that stuff. So it's a great thing. As a boy, one of my idols was an actor named Robert Quarry, and Robert Quarry was Count Yorga, if you ever saw those horror films, and they were kind of a hit. And then he sort of vanished after a couple more movies, and I was always wondered what happened to that guy, And I was like, oh, I guess he never made it. Then I found out years later that, no, he lived to a ripe old age, and he worked with this film director who made like 200 and something films. I want to say Robert Olan Ray, something like that was the guy's name. But anyway, he made like 200 films. We just never saw them,
Okay, that's fair.
So I'm like, if that happens to me, hopefully our people will see our stuff, and I know they will, but, it's like that alone would be good enough, do the thing and enjoy it and make some great stuff for people to watch and be entertained,
Exactly. Well, I would like to, as we are winding down here, there's a couple things still left on the docket. And the first thing that we got to do is a little shameless self-promotion. So if there's any social medias that you want people to click on to bug you and follow you along, go ahead and let them know now.
Sure. Probably the only place to find me, the easiest way, is on Facebook, you Book of Old Faces for you Renaissance people. If you search Merlin the Wise or Mark C. Wilson, you'll find me. But I have Magic Room Studios. If you search for Magic Room Studios on Facebook, you'll find my studio site, which is an actual physical location. It's a recording studio and a video production studio. We got a big console and drums and pianos and walls of synthesizers and all that stuff. And then video editing set up and the whole shebang, but that's the best place to find me. And then on YouTube, I have Magic Room Studios. Just for fun, I have Retro Computing Wizard. There's not very much going on there and not a lot of videos and not very many subscribers. But if you're into the old Atari computers or any of that stuff, if we have any nerds in the audience want to check that out, that's a side thing. But yeah, that's my main channel right now, is Magic Room Studios. And there's some cool videos. There's a video with Tony on there. Tony did a cover of Danger Zone that we produced together. And I'm playing most of the instruments, and I'm in the video, and he's on the video all the way through, because it's him singing. And that's a fun video. Check that out. It's there. It's Dr. Moss and Danger Zone. Just search Dr. Moss, Danger Zone. You can. It's on Magic Room Studios YouTube channel as well.
Okay. And, you know, traders will be there. I will put links in the video description and in the podcast description.
Very cool.
Yeah.
There we go. I have this. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been working on the setup, so I'm set where I can... Got my piano right there, you know.
That's cool.
Nice. I was going to mention a big influence was Ron Grainer, who did the theme song for a lot of 60s television, like The Prisoner and Doctor Who, the original Doctor Who theme. And he did a film called The Omega Man. So when I mentioned Charlton Heston earlier, that film was probably one of the most influential when I went music scoring. I want to do that. It was way ahead of its time and very cool music. So check out The Omega Man score if you're really a film music nerd.
Yeah, absolutely. And you covered so many things, and we have such a short window. Like, this is actually longer interviews, but there's one thing left we got to do.
All right, you got to do it. Go ahead.
The infamous wheel. If you feel like participating in the infamous wheel. All right, so for those of you that are just tuning in, this is a wheel that I spin. It has a couple little categories on it, and each category has a different little mini game of sorts. And most of them involve Mark trying to answer a question, and we see how it goes. So let's spin this wheel.
Oh, look at that. He's got the real wheel.
Two truths and a lie. I have not yet gotten this one. So this is actually a reversal of what normally happens. So what we're going to do is you're going to tell me two truths and a lie about yourself. And I'm going to try and guess the lie.
Okay. I think I can get you on this one.
Okay.
We're just going to keep it to one topic. The feature film Land of Leopold, which is probably the most high profile film that I've been in. Had Ray Wise in there, and they actually brought a crew from Hollywood here, and they shot in Taylor and hired local talent and did, you know, shot it here to keep the budget down. It was a SAG ultra low production. So, but I'm on cast on that film, and okay, so I'll make three statements about that production, and you have to tell me which one is a lie.
Okay.
So first off, filming was there was a lot of dialogue that I had trouble learning. You know, it was my first feature film. I had a lot of difficulty in remembering all my lines and, you know, and saying a lot of takes. And I think I was starting to piss off the director a little bit. That's one statement I'll make. And then another one is I actually talked to Ray Wise, and Ray Wise actually told me that he was originally on a soap opera, his first real popular character. And the fan club he had his own fan club in the 60s. And the lady in America that ran his fan club was also president of the Peter Cushing fan club. And so he actually got to meet Peter Cushing and told me the story that he actually met Peter Cushing. And what was the third thing? The third thing was they actually used a camera, a red camera, with a lens that came from Hollywood. There are only two in existence known at that point in time. And they had retrofitted it to fit the red. And they actually brought a rain truck in to spray water into the set, and they actually covered the camera in plastic and told me not to film the behind the scenes because they were violating all the rules of renting this camera, because there was no insurance for that. They weren't supposed to be doing that. You know, so he was like, dude, don't film this. That was the third thing. Is that clear enough? Those are my three stories.
Oh, that's you couldn't make it easy, could you? You know, just given off of in Facebook, like talking back and forth, and what I have interacted with you right now, I'm gonna say that first one is the lie.
Whoa, you are so good. Oh, that is awesome. Because I did it pretty convincingly, actually. The director did get angry with me, but it was a completely different thing. Nothing to do with me. I actually had one line written. When I went into audition, I was told there were no lines.
Okay.
He had me improv for 20 minutes. And I could talk about that whole process. That's something that happens quite a lot, actually. But anyway, I got the role. When I got on set, they had scripted two lines. One of them they struck because the other actress had to be out that day, so that line didn't make any sense. And the other line didn't make the final edit. So I had no lines in the film. I'm all over the film, but I'm a mute character. So yeah, the first one was a lie. You got it.
Yes.
Good job.
All right. Well, look, Mark, I want to say thank you so very much for coming on the show. It's been amazing talking to you, and I can't wait to talk to you in person down in Texas. This is going to be an amazing ride. Thank you so much. You've been great.
Thank you so much for having me on, and we'll talk to you next time.
Absolutely. Thank you to all the viewers and listeners who tuned in to check this out. You all have been absolutely amazing, and I would not keep this show going if it were not for the likes of you. So thank you all very, very much for that. Keep up the good work, and tune in next time for the next episode. We'll see you all later.